three still bedazzled by sleep. "Where's Peter and Charlie?" I shouted. Crow and Nod looked like they didn't understand what I was saying, but Sal was on her feet right away.
"They must have gone while we slept," she said, and her face was white and scared.
She reached for my arm and I shook her off. "I thought I could trust you."
"Jamie, I'm sorry," she said. "I'm so sorry."
"Why are you yelling just because Peter and Charlie are gone?" Crow said.
"Because Peter hates Charlie," Nod said.
So he understood, too, what Peter's game was about. Before Fogg died, he wouldn't have even noticed.
"We could track him."
I shook my head.
"No.
It's hard to track Peter in the day. It's impossible in the night."
"Where would he take him?" Sal asked.
I immediately thought of the crocodile pond and then realized Peter would never take Charlie anywhere so obvious. He would know that I would think of the story and run to save Charlie there. There was only one place where he'd go, because he would think we'd never guess.
"The many-eyed," I said. "He's taking Charlie to the nest."
"Would Charlie follow him there?"
Nod asked, and now his face was white too. Nod never went near the plains or even the border of them if he could avoid it.
"He's scared of the many-eyed."
While we were talking, I was gathering anything that might be useful. Bows and arrows, knives, rocks, slingshot, sharp sticks, the special stones that we used to start fires. I thrust all of these things in my sling bag.
"Peter's got Charlie now," I said. "He'll believe anything Peter says, do anything Peter does. If Peter said it was a wonderful lark to cross the plains at night, then Charlie would do it."
I started out of the tree and the others followed, though Crow still looked like he didn't really understand what was happening. Instead of taking the trail that led in the direction of Bear Cave, I went toward the forest on the opposite side. From there, we could cut through the trees to the central plains, which was where the many-eyed nested. Before we entered the trees, I stopped. I couldn't take a chance that I was wrong. I would lose Charlie forever if I was wrong.
That story. Always that damned story chasing Charlie and me.
"Go to the crocodile pond and make sure they aren't there," I told Nod and Crow. Nod's face hardened.
"You don't have to keep me from the many-eyed just because I'm afraid."
"I'm not," I said. "I just don't want Charlie to die if I'm wrong about where Peter took him." He looked into my eyes hard and believed me. Nod grabbed Crow and took off running in the other direction. Then I started to run too toward the plains of the many-eyed. Sal ran beside me. She never stumbled, she never slowed, she never hesitated. She just stayed right beside me, driven by the same fear that was riding me. My little duckling, wrapped in a many-eyed silk, nothing but food for their babies. The branches lashed me, but I didn't feel them. Bears and wolves and cats ran from us, for we didn't slow when we saw them, and that meant we were something to be feared. The moon went down, the sky turned purple-orange, and we broke out of the trees and into the plains. Charlie and Peter were just before us. Peter was whispering into his cupped hand, and Charlie's hand was wrapped around it. Then Charlie caught sight of us, wild-eyed and sweaty, and his face lit up.
"Jamie, Jamie! Peter's showing me how to fly!"
"No," I said, but I couldn't run fast enough. Peter grinned down at me as the two of them floated up into the air high above, and he pulled Charlie over the long yellow grass. Charlie laughed in delight, and Peter laughed too. Laughed because he'd won. I watched, chest heaving in despair as they flew toward the center of the plains. I couldn't outrun Peter in the air. He would carry Charlie to the many-eyed nest and drop him there, and that would be the end of my trusting duckling. No. There had to be something I could do. I couldn't just let it happen. I couldn't let Peter win. I threw down the sling bag in frustration. All my weapons, all my plans, they were useless against a boy who could fly. The firestones rolled out of the bag. The breeze went through my hair. The wind was blowing from the south, almost directly from the south. "Burn them," I said, and grabbed the stones. "Burn them all out." Sally understood immediately. She always knew precisely what I was thinking. She ran to collect wood that would be useful for torches.
If we burn the plains, then the many-eyed would have nowhere to go but the sea, if they survived the flames. The wind would help send the fire where I wanted it to go, toward the nest and away from our forest. Peter might still try to drop Charlie in the middle of the plains and hope the little boy cooked to death. I was going to run ahead of the fire for just that reason. Nod and Crow shot out of the forest just as I lit the first torch.
Good. This is better, I said when I saw them. Nod, you take this torch and go west, light all the plains grass all the way to the sea on that side.
I touched the tip of the torch to another piece of wood, and when it caught, I handed it to Crow.
You do the same going east, all the way to the mountains.
They didn't even ask why. They just took the torches and ran, lighting the grass as they went. I pulled some cloth out of my pocket to wrap around my face. Sal took it from my hand and tore it so she could do the same.
I'm not staying behind, she said. Don't ask me to. It's down to me that Peter got away with him.
There was no time to disagree, no time to talk about what she ought to do or who was at fault. Maybe it was Sal, for sleeping when she ought to be watching. Maybe it was me, for underestimating Peter.
Or maybe it was Peter, because he was a monster.
We ran and we set fire to everything. Soon the smoke billowed and surrounded us, and the flames were curling at our heels, trying to catch us, to drag us down, to eat us alive. Sweat poured off my face and over my body, soaking my clothes. My throat was parched, scorched by the smoke despite the cloth I'd tied to prevent that. The fire roared all around, a hungry, mad thing that swallowed everything before it, and I realized that we needed to run for our own lives, not just Charlie's. Then I heard, just above the howl of the flames, the terrified screeching of the many-eyed, and I smelled them burning. We ran straight into the nest. The egg sacs were all aflame, and any adults that were in their silks had caught fire as well. Most of them were running ahead. I heard their mad buzzing as they tried to escape the fire. There was so much smoke, so much heat. I didn't know it would be like that. I didn't understand fire was that kind of monster. We kept running. The nest was enormous. A series of spun silk caves connected by longer threads, one after another. If Peter dropped Charlie, it'd be here. But if he was here, how would I find him? I hadn't reckoned on the black smoke, a black billowing cloud that was drowning everything. And the noise. The fire was so noisy, a roaring, howling thing. Calling out for Charlie was pointless. Then Sal grabbed my shoulder. Her eyes were streaming from the smoke and so were mine, but she pointed to the ground ahead of us. There was my Charlie, half wrapped in many-eyed silk, his arms and head exposed.
"Not dead," I moaned. "No, not dead."
I ran to him and picked him up and held his little body to mine and felt his heartbeat. Sal tugged me up. The fire was already there, hunting us, relentless. We ran and ran and ran toward the sea, and I held Charlie close to me and promised that I would keep him safe. Over and over I promised that, if only he would live. And then somehow we were out of the grass and falling on the dry sand of the beach. Before us were the many-eyed that had outrun the fire. There were so many of them, so many I couldn't count. I'd never really understood. They filled the space between the plains and the water, and they didn't seem to notice us at all. The ones that were closest to the sea were screeching in terror, as were the ones that were being burned by flame. All the many-eyed in between were pushing and buzzing and trying to find a way out when there was none. I scrambled, exhausted, toward some jumbled rocks on the west end, and Sal followed me. We stayed low, crawling, avoiding the many-eyed's teeth and legs and stingers. I clutched at Charlie with one arm and pulled myself along with the other. We reached the rocks and I made Sal go up first so I could pass Charlie to her. Then I followed, taking Charlie again, and we climbed until we were well above the sand. Sal collapsed at the top, pulling the cloth off her face and coughing. There was no flat space to rest on. All those rocks were jumbled and sharp, but the sea air was fresh and we were away from the madness of the many-eyed. I took the cloth off my face, and then cut the silk off Charlie's body with my dagger. I pressed my ear against his chest and listened.
His heart still beat, but slowly, and his breath wasn't easy. Sal watched me with frightened eyes. "Is he?" "He's still alive," I said. My voice was strange and croaking, and my lungs burned. I felt like I was still inside the smoke, even though it was billowing away from us up above the island. I wondered what the pirates made of all this. I wondered where Peter was now. I propped my back against one of the rocks and pulled Charlie into my lap, his head on my shoulder. Below us, the many-eyed were now in a frenzy. At first, I was too exhausted to realize why. Then I saw about a dozen of them knocked off their feet and swept into the ocean. The tide was coming in. The tide was coming in, and the fire in the plains had reached its peak fury. The flames twice as high as the grass that burned. As the many-eyed in front ran from the seeking ocean, the many-eyed in the rear caught fire. Some in the middle were trampled as others panicked and tried to run. There was nowhere for them to run. We stayed on the rocks for a long, long time, watching the destruction of the many-eyed. It should have given me more satisfaction than it did. I'd always wanted to rid the island of that vermin. I'd finally succeeded. Soon, the beach was littered with the bloated, stacked corpses of the many-eyed as far as my eye could see. Some of the dead ones closest to the fire caught and burned, and the air filled with the acrid smoke from their flesh. Charlie's eyes didn't open, and I didn't know how to tell Sally about the tree. We'd thwarted Peter. He hadn't been able to kill Charlie, and he wouldn't have another chance. The smaller boy wouldn't believe in him a second time. But we were still trapped on the island. The tunnel to the other place was gone. Sally didn't speak for a long time. She stared, dully, out at the slow massacre of the many-eyed. Then she said, "Did you know he could fly?" "I saw him once," I said, and the words seemed thick and heavy in my mouth. I was so tired. I never could catch him at it again. "How?" she said. "If I knew, I'd have flown after him," I said. "Maybe Charlie will tell us," Sally said, and stroked his yellow hair. It seemed so overwhelming then, so impossible. How could I defeat a boy who could fly, a boy who destroyed our best means of escape? I wanted to tell Sally, so she could understand, so she could help me. She would be angry with me if I tried to solve it all on my own, if I didn't let her stand by me as she said she would. But I was tired. So tired. I closed my eyes, and I remembered. Chapter 15. "Mama? Mama?" She wasn't in the kitchen. She liked to be there by the fire, in her chair, mending clothes or polishing cookpots or just rocking while she stared into the flames. She liked it because it was far away from him, the he who stalked through our house like an angry shadow. The he who staggered home from the pubs, stinking of ale and searching for a reason to be angry at us. He would never hit me if she was there, because she would stand in front of me and tell him to leave off her boy, her blue eyes sparking fury. My eyes weren't blue. They were black, like his. Dark and pupilless, like the eyes of the sharks that swam in the sea. But my hair was like hers. Soft and dark, and I would put my head on her knee while she stroked my head, and we would both cry and pretend that we hadn't. She would sing a little song, a song that went into my heart and stayed there, a song that I would sing all the long years of my life. He had gone out, as he always did every evening, before I came home from the bookbinder's. Mama hoped I would apprentice there when I was older, but for now I fetched and carried and cleaned up after the older men, and at the end of the day they would give me a coin or two to bring home to her.
She was saving all those coins in a secret place, a place he didn't know about. And no matter how hard he hit her, she wouldn't tell. I wouldn't tell either, because I didn't know where it was. But she was saving them, so that one day we could run away to a place where there were no fists and no fear. Just me and Mama. Happy for always. I went into the cottage and called for her, but she didn't come to the door with a smile the way she always did. He wasn't home. I knew for certain. For when he was in the house, he filled up all the empty space. Even when he slept, he did this. The sound of his drunken snores echoing through the cottage. The smell of drink and sick, overwhelming any fresh air that might come in the open window. Mama? I called. And when I went through to the kitchen, she wasn't there. And I started to worry. Our cottage was only 4 rooms, and when I went through all of them, I didn't know what to do. She might have gone to the market, except that it was late and the market was closed. She would never have gone out with him, for she said that drink made him disgusting, and he didn't want her with him anyhow. I stood in the kitchen and wondered if I should look for her, or if I should stay exactly where I was so she wouldn't worry if she came back. I hated to make her worry, for she already had so many cares and I didn't like to add to them. Then I noticed that the back door of the cottage was open, just a little. Mama would never go out and leave the door open like that. There were rats that lived in the narrow way behind our home, and Mama hated rats, and an open door was an invitation to them, she always said so. And the candles were lit, and so was the fire. Candles were dear, and Mama wouldn't waste them. She wouldn't go out and leave the fire untended. I went to the door and pushed it all the way open. I trembled all over as I peered in the dark, the flickering light of the kitchen behind me. I couldn't see anything except the shifting shadows, but I heard the scurrying of rats and I shuddered. I didn't like rats either, though I wouldn't tell Mama that. I wanted Mama to think I was brave. I didn't want to let the rats in the cottage, but I didn't want to go out into the dark either, so I stood there and called. Mama? She didn't answer. I wasn't certain what to do. The door was open, so Mama must have come this way, and the candles were lit, so she must have meant to return soon. But she didn't answer. She might be hurt, I decided, and if Mama was hurt, I would have to be brave, so that she would be proud of me. I took a candle from the kitchen and walked out into the night, closing the door behind me. The sound of the door closing made me jump. Candle wax dripped on my hand with a hiss. It smelled funny, not like the smell of rotting and rats like it usually did. There was something else, something that made my nose itch. I walked out carefully, the stones ringing under my boot heels. They were so loud in the darkness, though from out on the street in front of the cottage came the noise of people laughing and talking and shouting at one another. Those people seemed very far away from me. The circle of light cast by the candle was small, so that the dark pressed all around it. I thought I saw, just for a moment, a wink of silver ahead of me, a flash that reflected the faint light and then disappeared. First my foot trod on something, something soft. Then the glow from the candle found it. And she was there. Her eyes were blue and empty. Her dark hair was all around her head in a tangle. She lay on her side and her arms were thrown out in the direction of the cottage, like she was reaching for something, like she was reaching for me. Her mouth was open, and so was her throat, and the blood was all over her blue dress, seeping from the smile where no smile should be. Mama? I said. And my voice was very, very small. I reached for her then because it couldn't be. It couldn't be that my mama who kissed me and hugged me and held me so tight, was there on the stones with her throat cut and blood on her dress. I tried to pick her up, to make her wake up, to make her stop pretending to be gone forever. The candle fell from my hand and went out. "What have you done?"
a voice ringing through the darkness. "My mama," I sobbed. A boy appeared from nowhere, a boy I thought at first I'd never seen before and then realized I had. He was a little older than me and had green eyes and ginger hair, and more than once I'd seen him on the street near our cottage. He didn't seem to belong to anyone, and sometimes I thought he was watching me when I went home at the end of the day. But when I tried to get a good look at him, he would be gone. Now he stood over Mama and me and looked sternly down at me.
"What have you done?"
he said again.
"I didn't do anything," I said. "I found her. There's blood all over your hands, and when the constable comes, he'll think you killed her, and then they'll hang you," he said.
"But," I said.
"You have a very bad temper, don't you?" he said. "Don't you sometimes run at your father and hit him with your fists? Don't you sometimes get so angry that you break the crockery in the kitchen?"
I did. But I didn't see how this boy could know that. I sometimes ran at him and punched him as hard as I could when I couldn't bear letting my mama stand between us any longer, and it would make me angrier because he seemed to like me better then. He would say that I had spirit and that at least I wasn't hiding behind mama's skirts. I hated to do anything that made him happy, but I hated it when my mama was hurt too, and sometimes all these feelings would push and pull inside me until I wouldn't know what to do. And I would smash and break things until they went away. Then, when it was all over, Mama would put her arms around me and hold me until I was better. Everyone around these parts knows you have a bad temper, and when they find her... Here the boy jerked his chin at the thing that used to be my Mama. "They'll know it was you because you get so angry all the time and because your hands are covered in blood." I looked at my hands then, and though it was dark, I could see the stains on them, and I was terrified that what this boy said would be true. "But I didn't hurt her," I said. "I would never hurt her. I love her so much." Tears rolled out then, and the other boy smacked me hard.
"Stop crying," he said. "Boys don't cry like that. Now listen, you have to come with me. I know a place where you'll be safe, and they'll never catch you."
He had me all confused now. Tangled up and turned around. I believed that when the constable came, they would arrest me and they would throw me in a dark, dark place full of rats until it was time for me to hang.
"If you come with me, we'll go to my island. It's a special place, only for boys like you and me. And there, you can run and play and no one will hit you and you'll never, never grow up."
"How can you never grow up?"
"The island is magic," he said,
and he smiled.
"And I live all alone there, and I want you to come there and play with me and be my friend for always."
He tugged me up, tugged me away, and I was confused and scared, and already forgetting my mama and her empty blue eyes, and her arms thrown out, reaching for me. Peter pulled me away and told me all about the wonderful place that we were to go to, a place that was only for us. We walked all night, and reached the tree and tunnel, and then I was so tired, and Mama seemed like she was a story from a far-off time. We went through the tunnel, and I smelled the island for the first time, smelled the trees, and the sea, and the sweet fruit, and the scent of the city was washed away. And later, Peter and I were picking fruit from a meadow, and he showed me how to take the skin off with his knife. There were red stains on the knife, but I didn't wonder about them at all, for all I could see was Peter smiling at me.
"Jamie, you're squashing me. Jamie, let go of him, he can't breathe."
I opened my eyes and found Charlie awake in my lap. Sal leaned over, tugging at my arms. "What is it?" I asked.
"You're squashing me," Charlie said, and he pushed at my chest.
"You were dreaming," Sal said.
I let Charlie go and he scrambled free. I scrubbed at my face with my hands. My face was wet, though I couldn't tell whether it was from sweat or tears.
"What were you dreaming of?" Sal asked.
"The same thing I always dream. A woman with blue eyes and black hair with her throat cut. I said. I didn't know until today that it was my mother.
And?
Sal said, for she knew there was more. And it was Peter who killed her. I didn't know how I could have forgotten her. Forgotten the mamma who loved me so much. Forgotten how she stood between my father and me and kept me safe. I felt a wrench of shame that she would be lost to me so easily, that I would run away with a strange boy and leave her there. I'd left her alone, alone with the rats who would gnaw at her until someone found her. Maybe my father, maybe a neighbor, maybe a happy drunk stumbling into the alley to take a piss. But Peter had confused me. He had. He told me that it would be my fault, that I would be blamed. I was scared and confused, and the only person who ever mattered to me was staring up at me with blank blue eyes, and his hand offered an escape from the hanging I was sure would come. Who would believe a little boy, especially a boy covered in his mother's blood? So when he took my hand, it was easy to leave her there, easy to run away from the horror, easier to forget that she loved me. Especially with Peter telling me all the time to forget that nothing from the other place mattered, that it was just him and me now. I'd loved her, and I'd forgotten her. That was partly Peter's fault, but it was also mine. I'd wanted to forget. My anger at Peter burned brighter than it ever had, but my grief and my shame were almost worse. I'd remembered my mother, only to remember what I'd done. I'd left her there, her arms thrown out, reaching for me. The last thing she thought of was me, and I left her to run away with the monster who'd killed her. Sal gasped and covered her mouth at my words. Though I don't think she was surprised, not really. It seemed precisely the sort of thing that Peter would do if he wanted someone and there was somebody else in his way. Peter didn't care about obstacles, even if they were shaped like people. They were only things to be jumped over or to be knocked down. You didn't care about them. He'd done it all so well, really. He'd looked for me, not just any boy would do for Peter, and found a boy who had the potential he wanted. Then watched me and waited for his chance, and when he had it, he'd killed her, and then twisted me up so I was afraid. Once I was afraid, he could make me do anything he liked, and he made himself my savior, and he made me feel special and loved, and then he pushed all the memories of my mother out of me. Peter had chosen me first. He'd cut me away from the herd and taken me to the island, and I was too much of a boy to remember what I'd lost. I could only remember all the days when it was just Peter and me, and we were happy then. But the song had stayed. The song that my mother sang to me. No wonder he hated when he heard it. He wanted me to shed all my life in the other place like an old skin, but he couldn't stop bits of it clinging to me. Everything I lost swelled up inside me then. The life that I might have had without Peter. Yes, my father was a drunken ass who beat us. But we were saving my mama and me. We were going to leave him and find a quiet place away from the city where we'd be safe. And I would have grown up, and my mamma would have grown old, but there would have been grandchildren for her to kiss and hug and hold so tight. There would have been a life, a boring, ordinary life to Peter, but a full life, one that followed the natural order of things. It was not natural for boys to stay boys forever. We were supposed to grow up and have boys of our own, and teach them how to be men. I felt a sharp stabbing pain in my side, and then in my hands and legs and feet, and something scratchy and prickly at my chin. Charlie's eyes widened.
"Jamie, you've got a beard."
I rubbed my face. It wasn't quite a beard, but there was fuzzy hair that hadn't been there before. Sal hit my shoulder then.
"I told you not to grow up too fast. We're supposed to grow up together."
I don't think I have a choice, Sal, I said. And there was a little grief there, too. What if I kept growing, and I was too old for Sal? What then? It's not something I can stop. I stood and stretched and realized everything hurt. My lungs and eyes burned by smoke, my legs from trying to outrun the fire, my arms from clinging to Charlie so tight. The smaller boy was avoiding my eyes, staring at the mass of dead many-eyed on the beach. Behind them, the plains smoked still, though all the grass and flowers were gone now, and there was nothing except a blackened field as far as the eye could see.
"Peter," Charlie said,
and a sob caught in his throat. Sal reached for him, but I shook my head at her. He didn't need to be comforted yet. He needed to say what was in his heart first.
"Peter didn't like me," Charlie said. "He tricked me, and I believed him."
He did look at me then, and his eyes would never be those innocent little duckling eyes again. That was what happened when you were betrayed.
"I believed him, and then he tried to kill me," Charlie said. "You never hurt me, Jamie. You always watched out for me. I shouldn't have believed him."
"We all believe him at first," I said. "Even me. That's how he lures us here with his promises."
"And then he rips us all to pieces," Sally said.
"He won't bring any more here," I said, and took a deep breath, for now I had to tell her the thing I didn't want to say. "The path to the other place is gone."
"Gone?" she said.
I explained what I'd found, that the tree was cut down and the hole to the tunnel covered in grass. She wilted as I spoke, and for a moment I was afraid she would faint, for she'd gone very pale.
"How did he know? We'll never escape him," she whispered. Oh, why did I ever come here?"
"Because you thought it'd be better than what you had," I said. "You thought that you would be happier here."
"I would be happy here," she said fiercely, "if not for him. If it was just us, you and me, and Charlie and Nod and Crow, and we could grow up as we should, then I would be happy here."
"But he is here," I said, "and I don't want to stay on the island any longer. I've been here for too many seasons already."
"What do we do?" Charlie asked.
He came to my side then, and wound his fist in my coat the way he used to do. But he didn't put his thumb in his mouth. He wasn't a baby anymore. "We'll have to sail away," I said. "It's our only hope."
"Not with the pirates?" Sal asked. "Because I don't think they'll be very welcoming to us, not after all that's happened between us."
"That's all Peter's doing, and Nip's," I said sharply. "If Peter hadn't burned down their camp, and Nip hadn't told them where to find us, then we wouldn't have had to kill any of them. Or at least not so many of them. There might have been a raid, but it wouldn't have been the same." "Everything was Peter's fault. My mother was killed by Peter. The boys he brought here died because of Peter. The pirates came looking for a war because of Peter and were massacred by us because of Peter. Charlie had nearly been fed to the many-eyed because of Peter. It was all down to Peter."
"It doesn't matter now if it's our doing or Peter's," Sally said,
and she shook her head at the look on my face.
"It doesn't. The pirates think all of us are the same now. If we go to them for help, if we ask them to take us away in their ship, then they'll hurt us."
She added then in a small voice,
"They'll hurt me more than you if they know I'm a girl."
I didn't really understand this then, but I remembered that the pirates sometimes brought girls back to camp with them after they'd been away from the island, and that the girls spent all their time screaming and crying. So I took Sal's word. After all, she'd found it so unsafe to be a girl that she pretended to be a boy, which was how she'd ended up on the island in the first place. "We'll have to build a boat," I said. "Build it in a secret place where Peter won't find it."
He can find everything, Charlie said, because he can fly. He told me how he flies all over the island and he sees everything. It was nice to fly, even if it did end when Peter threw me on the ground. It was scary then. This big many-eyed made all this noise, and then Peter told the fairy what to say, and the fairy told the many-eyed that Peter brought me as a present for them to eat.
His eyes welled up then.
I thought he was my friend, and he tried to feed me to monsters.
Again, Sally wanted to pick him up and comfort him, but I stopped her.
Charlie, I said, what fairy are you talking about? The toy that Peter gave you.
Charlie shook his head.
No, silly. A toy's a toy. This is a real fairy. A fairy that lives on the island. She can talk to the many-eyed, and she showed Peter how to fly.
There are no fairies here, I said. I've never seen one.
There are, Charlie said. But they only like Peter and not the other boys, so they don't come out where we can see them. Only Tink does, because she's Peter's special friend.
Tink?
That's what he calls her, because she makes a kind of tinkling noise when she talks.
I gave Sally a significant look. I heard a tinkling noise that day when we were on the path talking about leaving for the other place.
Do you think she was spying on us for Peter? Sally said.
She always spies for Peter, Charlie said. And it's easy for her because she seems just like a firefly unless you get a close look.
And she taught Peter how to fly, I said.
Well, Charlie said, she didn't really teach him. She shakes her dust on him and the dust makes him fly.
So if we had some of that fairy dust, then we would be able to fly away from the island, I said slowly.
It doesn't last very long, Charlie said. That's what Peter said. You have to keep a fairy with you so she can keep dusting you. I don't think Tink would do it anyway. She doesn't like anyone except Peter, and I don't think it would be very nice to catch her.
What about the other fairies? Where do they live? I asked.
In the fields, Charlie said, and pointed at the desolation.
Oh, I said.
If any of them survived, then they won't want to help the ones that burn their homes down, Sally said sadly.
Then we've got to go back to the idea of sailing away, I said.
But Peter flies everywhere and knows everything, Sally pointed out. And if he doesn't, then this fairy will spy us out.
We've got to do something, I said. We can't stay here. What about taking a rowboat from the pirates? There are only 5 of us.
How would we do that? Asked Sally. We'd have to swim out to the pirate ship, and I can't swim.
Me either, Charlie said. That's all right, I said, warming to my plan. Nod and me can swim out at night and get the boat, and then take it around to the Mermaid Lagoon and meet you there.
Sally looked doubtful. Won't the mermaids tell Peter what we're about?
They won't know until it's happening, I said. I don't share secrets with mermaids, and anyway, the mermaids don't have any special love for Peter. They love themselves best.
And when will we do all this? Sally said.
Tonight, I said. We'll go back and find Nod and Crow, then we'll collect all the things we'll need.
Then Crow and Charlie and me will go to the lagoon, Sally said. And you and Nod will go for the rowboat.
Yes, I said.
What if Peter tries to stop us? Charlie asked.
I didn't answer. I think we all knew that it was down to him or us. If Peter tried to stop us, I would be ready for him.
Chapter 16. None of us wanted to climb over the corpses of the many-eyed or cross the smoking fields. We clambered over the rocks for several minutes until we came to the lagoon side, then skirted around the edge of the lagoon until we reached the main part of the forest. 3 or 4 mermaids were sunning on a flat rock in the center of the lagoon, their fishtails lolling in the water. They didn't give any sign that they noticed us, but I was sure they did. Mermaids noticed everything.
It was the only way for them to stay alive in the ocean with sharks and sea monsters all around. We stayed on the border where the forest met the plains. Crow had done a good job of it. All the grass had been burned here too, right up to where the plains, the forest, and the lagoon met. Smoke curled from the ground, and there was a lingering heat in the air. By unspoken agreement, Sally and I took it in turns to watch both the air and the forest. Now that we'd made our plans, I felt a lingering unease, sure that Peter would somehow discover the plot. If he did find out, it didn't mean that he would face us and fight us. No, it meant that he would try something crafty, like removing the rowboats from the pirate ship so we couldn't get at them, or even burning the whole ship itself. Peter had killed my mother, so I would stay with him for always. He destroyed the tunnel to the other place so I couldn't get away. I was sure he'd do anything he thought he must to keep me there with him. I was first for Peter, and it didn't matter whether I wanted to stay or not. Peter always got what he wanted. Then I saw him just ahead of us, kneeling on the ground over something. I let out a cry, and he stood and looked back at us, and I saw the bloody knife in his hand. "This is your fault, Jamie," he shouted at me. "Your fault. None of this would have happened if not for you." My dagger was out, and I ran at him, Charlie and Sally forgotten. All I saw was Peter and the red haze that covered my eyes. He killed my mother. Peter killed my mother because he wanted me to play with him. "It's your fault," I roared. "You took Charlie. You burned the pirate camp." "You killed my mother," I thought, but I couldn't say those words because the rage was choking me, consuming me. "I did everything because of you," Peter shouted. "All for you." I should have known he wouldn't fight fair. Before I was within throwing distance of him, he rose into the air, high above where I couldn't reach him. Blood dripped from his hand and his knife and onto my face as he flew above me and away. "That's not fair play, Peter," I shouted after him. "Not fair play at all." Sally screamed then, and her scream shocked me away from Peter. Then I saw what he'd been kneeling over. It was Crow. Peter had arranged him so all his limbs were pointed out like an X. Crow's throat was sliced from ear to ear, and then Peter had done the final thing to hurt me. He'd cut Crow's right hand off. That was my mark, the thing that I did to pirates. Peter wanted me to know that this was about me, not about Crow. Crow had died because of me. Sally covered Charlie's eyes, pulled him to her, but it was too late. The little boy had seen. He didn't cry, though. He only said, "There's so much blood." "Yes," I said. "Yes, there was so much blood. That was what Peter brought. He didn't bring magic and fun and eternal youth. He brought fear and madness and death, trailing blood behind him. Trailing all the corpses of all the boys behind him. And yet it didn't weigh him to the earth at all. Every drop of spilled blood only made him lighter, gave him the freedom to fly. "We have to find Nod," I said, "and get away as soon as we can."
"What if he's already killed Nod?" Sally said.
"We still need to know," I said.
"There might not be time for the rowboat," she said. "You have to go all the way across the island for it." "What about the other one?" Charlie said.
"What other one?"
"The one you left on the beach the day you killed all those pirates," Charlie said.
"That boat's probably gone now," I said. "I didn't anchor it, and the tide would have taken it out to sea."
"Isn't it worth finding out?" Sally asked. "The Skull Rock beach is much closer than the pirate camp. Me and Charlie will go and see while you find Nod. It'll be faster if you go on your own anyway."
She was right. The pirate camp was much farther away, though getting there was safer now that the Many-Eyed were gone. But there would be the difficulty of crossing the camp under cover of dark as well, and then swimming out to the ship. If by some lucky chance the other rowboat was still there. "I can't believe it wouldn't have drifted away," I said. "I think you'd be safer just going to the Mermaid Lagoon like we planned."
There was at least a small chance that the mermaid's watchful eyes would stop any mischief Peter might try on Sally or Charlie. The mermaids had their own set of rules, and I hoped that they wouldn't let Peter kill anyone right in front of them.
"Stop talking to me about what's safer," Sally said. "Nobody's safe here. It's not safe as long as Peter is alive. Whether I'm with you or at the Mermaid Lagoon or at Skull Rock, I'm not safe. Peter took Charlie right from under our noses when we slept. There is no safe."
She made me all knotted up inside because she was right, but I didn't want her to be. I only wanted to be sure she was still alive when I returned. But there was no way to be sure any more. "All right," I said. I wanted to hug her again, or touch her hair, or just stand close and breathe her in. I didn't do any of those things. I didn't know how. I was only a boy, for all that I was beginning to look like a man. And there was no time. Sally and Charlie went south to cut through the forest and then the dunes and down to the beach. I went toward the tree, which was where I thought Nod would go if he couldn't find us. That was what we always did. We always went back to the tree. I ran, because I wanted to find Nod before Peter did. Because I wanted to get back to Sally and Charlie before Peter did. I ran because everything I loved had been taken from me again and again, and I was tired of Peter taking more. I didn't know what day it was anymore, or how long the sun had been up. It seemed I'd been running since Peter took Charlie away, but I wasn't tired. Fear and anger drove me on, made my legs stretch longer, made my feet barely touch the ground. Somewhere, I'd lost my moccasins, though I couldn't remember when that might have been. Perhaps my feet had grown out of them and I hadn't noticed. My red coat caught and snagged on branches, and I tore it off and threw it away in the woods. It didn't matter any more. Peter had always wanted the coat. He could have it now. I ran bare-chested and barefooted, wearing only my deerskin trousers and my knife. I looked, finally, like the wild boy that Peter always wanted me to be, but I would never be so much of a boy again. Peter wanted me to stay a boy, but it was Peter, finally, who made me a man. Then I was at the tree, and there was Nod sitting on the ground with his back against the trunk, holding his left hand over the bleeding wrist of his right. Nod gave me a weary smile as I ran to him. It was a very grown-up smile, not the smile of the boy he'd once been at all. I was a little harder to kill than Peter thought I'd be. You'd think he'd know that, having watched you at battle all these years. I inspected the wound. Peter had done a bad job of it. He'd cut into the inside of Nod's wrist, but not come close to taking the whole hand off. There were a few other nicks and cuts on his chest and arms, but the wrist was the worst thing. I went for the bandages and water and wrapped Nod's wrist up tight so that the bleeding would stop. "Where are Sally and Charlie?" he asked, and then he looked at me closely. "Jamie, you have a beard." "So do you," I said, scraping my hand down the side of his cheek. He seemed surprised by this and touched his face. It was only a few stringy hairs, but they hadn't been there before. Nod laughed, and I was struck by how different that laugh was, how much older it sounded. "We're growing up, Jamie," he said. "I wonder why after all this time." "It's because we don't love Peter anymore," I said. I'd only just figured this out when I saw Nod's face. "Because we don't want to be boys and do boy things for always. The island will keep you young if you want it, and Peter never wants to be a man. But we don't want it any more." "No," Nod said. "I had enough of being a boy when Fog died." I finished patching Nod up, and then ran to collect all that I thought we would need on the boat. Water, food, rope, weapons. I made certain to pack one of the pirate swords as well as an axe, and several small daggers. There was a great deal to carry, but there was no sense in pushing a rowboat into the sea without supplies. All we would be doing was trading Peter's death for the slow death of starvation. I let Nod rest until I was ready. He'd wanted to carry some of the supplies, but I wouldn't let him.
He'd lost too much blood, and I was worried he wouldn't be able to make it to Skull Rock as it was. Somehow, night had fallen again. How did the days pass so quickly then? I felt as though I'd just left to find Charlie, to save him from the Many-Eyed. I felt like I'd been on the island forever, running in circles, trying to escape Peter's trap. Once, a long time before, I'd found a wolf's paw inside one of our rope traps. Just the paw, not the rest of the wolf. It was mangled and torn and horrible-looking, for the wolf had chewed off its own foot, rather than be caught. I should have chewed off my foot long ago, but I didn't know that I was in a trap. Peter smiled and made me think there was only joy. Even when there was blood, he made me think it was only play, until there was so much of it, even Peter couldn't pretend any more. Fireflies lit the night in the forest. I used to love to watch them light up, sparkling like stars close enough to touch, but I swatted any that came near me. I wasn't certain any more that they were fireflies. They might be fairies in disguise, spying for Peter and telling tales back to him. And if they were fairies, they would have no love for me, for I'd burned all the plains where they'd lived. Would I have still burned the plains if it meant getting rid of the Many-Eyed and saving Charlie? Yes, I would have. But I would have warned the fairies if I'd known they were there. This was another fault to lay at Peter's door. If he hadn't kept the fairies secret, then they might have been saved. Peter had wanted them all to himself, to keep their magic just for him. Peter wanted to fly, but he wanted the rest of us bound to Earth. I tried to hurry Nod along, but he was tired and bloodless and not driven by the same fear that I was. He cared about Sally and Charlie, but it wasn't the same. Or so I thought. We'd hardly spoken since leaving the tree. I could think only of Sally and Charlie and Peter and what might happen while I was gone. Sally wanted me to trust her, to believe that she could look after herself because she'd done so for years before she met me. But Sally didn't know Peter. Not really. Peter wasn't like the boys that Sally fought for food on the streets of the city. We'd crossed into the dunes, and the sky opened up above us. So many stars wheeled overhead, it was hard to imagine them all. They were brighter that night than they'd ever been, and they seemed to cry out to me, "Hurry, hurry, hurry." "I know she loves you," Nod said. He startled me. I wasn't thinking about love. I was thinking about getting Sally and Charlie off the island and away from Peter. "What?" "Sally," Nod said. I thought he might be blushing. "So?" I said. I wasn't certain why we were talking about this now. "I was hoping it would be me, but it's you. And I just wanted you to know that it's all right." It felt strangely like he was giving us a blessing. And it made me feel awkward in a way that I'd never been with Nod before. "Okay," I said. I didn't want to talk about it any more. "You've always been the best of us, Jamie," Nod said, and his voice cracked. "Me and Fogg, we always looked up to you. We always wanted to be just like you, only we never were." If he was crying, I didn't want to see. I only wanted to get to the beach. The night was spinning on, and Peter could have found them by now. "I wasn't as good as you think," I said. "You kept us alive. You looked after us. We all knew it, even if we didn't say so. We knew it made Peter jealous." "Peter's not jealous of me," I said. "Only of anyone that takes me away from him." "He is," Nod insisted. "He knows no one will ever love him the way we all loved you." My throat felt clogged suddenly. I cleared it noisily, but found I couldn't say anything. What could I possibly say? "We all loved you, and so we love Peter too, because you did. But when you stopped, so did the rest of us. You always made us see him through your eyes." If I'd known I had that kind of power over the boys, I might have left sooner. I might have saved more of them. It took such a long time for me to see Peter as he truly was. He blinded me, and shame wriggled in my stomach. Was this, too, part of growing up? Was it facing the bad things you'd done as well as the good and knowing all your mistakes had consequences? Peter made mistakes all the time. He was thoughtless. He hurt people. But it never troubled him, not for a moment. He forgot all about it in an instant. That was being a boy. I wasn't a boy any more. Then she screamed, and screamed again. It echoed over the dunes, high and shrill. Peter. Peter had found them. I dropped everything I was carrying and ran for my life, for Sally's life, for Charlie's life. One more time, I ran. Chapter 17. Nod ran with me, or tried to, but he soon fell behind. I heard him panting and coughing, trying to keep up. Sally's scream went on and on. I don't know how long I ran, listening to that scream hovering in the air, and then it stopped. When it stopped, I ran faster, though I didn't know that I could. My body already felt like it was pushed far past the point of pain or exhaustion. I didn't feel anything except fear, except the pounding of my heart driving me along. In my mind, I saw Sally on the beach, her arms spread out in an X like crow, a big red smile at her throat where there shouldn't be one at all. Her blue eyes empty and open, a cloud of dark hair around her head, just like my mother. Because that was what Peter did. If I loved someone, he took them away. I should never have loved her in the first place, or Charlie, or Nod. Or Fog, or Crow, or Dell, or anybody. Not even my mother. I'd loved her, and so Peter had cut her away from me, just as quick as the pirate he was. He took what he wanted, and left what he didn't behind. The moon was full, like it always was on the island, watching with its cold, cold eye. The seasons changed, but the moon never did. The moon was Peter's brother, never changing. It lit up the sand and the ocean like daylight, but at first I didn't see them. I did see the rowboat, though. Charlie had been right about that. But what good was the boat if Charlie and Sally were dead? Then I did see them. And everything was worse. Much worse than I'd imagined. Peter hadn't slit Sally's throat and left her for me to weep over. He'd brought a crocodile to the beach. I knew Peter must have done it on purpose, for the crocodiles always stayed near the pond. None of them would have roamed the forest or cruised as far as the place where the marsh met the sea. In all the years I'd been there, I'd never seen such a thing. A huge crocodile, its belly round and dragging in the sand, sprinted after Charlie with surprising speed. Peter was high above the sand, laughing in the air as Charlie ran, trying to reach the safety of the rocks at the other end. The little boy was so scared, he was zigzagging this way and that, always just out of reach of the crocodile's snapping jaws. I heard his thin cry of terror streaming behind him. I was sure that if Charlie managed to reach the rocks, Peter would grab him and drop him into the crocodile's open mouth. Peter was well past the point of pretending to care any more. No one remained to pretend for. Almost all the boys were gone, and the ones who were left no longer believed in him. I ran, not knowing how I could do it again, knowing only that if I didn't reach him in time, Charlie would be eaten for certain. And I wished I'd thought to bring some arrows, for nothing would have pleased me more than to shoot Peter out of the sky and watch him fall like a burning star to earth. There were trails of dark blood in the sand. I caught a glimpse, just from the corner of my eye. Something that looked like Sally. Or something that used to be Sally. If Sally was dead, I couldn't help her. Charlie was what mattered now. Peter didn't appear to have noticed me yet, for he was too busy laughing himself silly at Charlie's struggle to reach and climb the rocks. The last time I was at those rocks, I had to scrape off what was left of six boys and bury them all. I didn't want to do that again. I didn't think I could bear it,
to put Charlie in the ground. The crocodile snapped, and this time it caught Charlie's leg. He screamed in terror as the croc ripped away his pants and teeth grazed his leg, but he wasn't caught, not yet. I put on a burst of speed, my dagger out in my left hand, and leapt onto the back of the crocodile. Its scaly back scratched my bare chest, and I felt all the